The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
There's a reason that we live so far from Hollywood. In the country, looking hard to find a home. Well, nothing perfect or considered. So damn good. It's the story of your life.
Morning, Glory, America. Bonjour, hi. If you hear it inside the Beltway on December the 2nd, 2020. 1-2-2-2-0-2-0. So that's significant somehow. I don't know how it is, but it's significant somehow. Welcome. Good morning. A lot of news this morning. I want to run down in the rundown for you. First, I want to say thanks to Commissioner Ken Hodder and Commissioner Jolene Hodder, who were guests of the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I in our home last night inside the Beltway. Commissioners Ken and Jolene Hodder are the big boss of the Salvation Army in the United States. And we had just a great time. I've met him on the air before, like so many people in my life. I know them via the radio, see you on the radio. And but they happen to have been transferred from the West Coast when they became commissioner, which is the lead officer for the Army in the United States. And they've got 5,400 other officers, thousands of employees and millions of volunteers working for them in the Salvation Army. So they're wonderful people. I joke because Ken just is a year younger than me. He went to Harvard a year behind me and went to Harvard Law immediately and was practicing big firm law in Los Angeles when the Lord called him into the Salvation Army. And we just had a wonderful chat. Jolene is an amazing woman. And together they've spent their entire life in the service of the lost and the least, the poor, the halt. I'm going to go out and ring a handbell with them on Friday. I'll tell you about where inside the Beltway, somewhere in Alexandria, I think, Virginia. It might be Arlington, Virginia. Not quite sure. I'm pretty good at the handbells. I mean, whenever there's a handbell convention, Well, I won't get into that. Nevertheless, if you ever listen closely to Once When We Were Young by the Moody Blues, you'll hear a little handball in there. Well, that's what I think means handbell. But different kind of handbell coming up on this. But I wanted you all to know, the Army is not bent to knee to the virus, though there are only half the kettles out there. And they've re-engineered their virtual kettle campaign, and they've opened up rescuechristmas.org. And the demands on the Salvation Army have gone up 150% this year, and they only have half the kettles out because of the virus. And they're meeting the challenge. They're meeting the challenge. Rescuechristmas.org. Go and be generous to them. It's very inspiring, and you feel like a dope. You go to sleep slow thinking, here I am in my nice warm house, inside the Beltway, talking to people every day, thinking I'm working pretty hard with four different jobs. And I'm not, you're not, they are. And every night they go around the Capital Region feeding the homeless, of which there are many. I know that San Francisco and L.A. have these reputations in Seattle for homeless meccas. Washington, D.C. has the great system. And since I was a young man and would run in the pre-dawn hours around the mall and go by the State Department, it's proliferated. In the days of Mitch Schneider, which some people who are longtime Beltway will remember, Mitch was the first homeless activist. There are vast numbers of homeless in camp. And the Army takes care of them, like they take care of everyone. And I was fascinated to hear how they've been fighting the virus. We all have no problems. That's what I like to remind people. No matter where you are this morning, if you're feeling grumpy, your packages are later incoming, you've been down at work, people are on your case, indeed, some of you have lost your jobs and are waiting for the restaurants that you work at to reopen. Yeah, there are difficult times, but compared to the problems they deal with every day, it's just amazing. We should just begin the morning with gratitude. Let me begin the morning with news. Joe Biden has called Tom Friedman. in what I expect to be a theme, there'll probably be 48 of these columns. Tom Friedman has one column a month ready. I'm going to have to ask the chief of staff, Ron Klain, will the vice president-elect call me in? I'll write a column, too, because it's the easiest column in the world when the president calls you and you're allowed to write about it. I'll tell you about that in a minute. President Trump filed a last-ditch lawsuit in Wisconsin, generally believed to have zero chance of succeeding. There is no legal path to success or victory. Attorney General Barr declared yesterday there is no fraud that is actionable to a degree necessary to overturn the election. Much more importantly, Bill Barr appointed a special counsel, John Durham, into the investigations surrounding the origins of the Russian probe. And that means Comey, McCabe, the whole gang, anybody else in the IC, intelligence community, and the White House at the time. And they won't be able to get rid of Durham. If they do, there will be, an enormous and immediate blowback that will have political damage to the president-elect. I don't think he'll do that. Nevertheless, every nominee of the president-elect to the Department of Justice will be asked, I'm sure, under oath at their confirmation to both cooperate with and certainly not interfere with the special counsel Durham as he investigates the origins of the Russia hoax. That was a big win yesterday. The United Kingdom approved the Pfizer vaccine. They'll approve the Moderna vaccine. They will approve the AstraZeneca vaccine. There's a great story in the Telegraph about how they're going to roll it out, and they already have their tier system. The United States making this a lot more dramatic than it has to be. They're going to start in the elderly homes. Then they're going to recommend people in groups over 75, and then they're going to drop down 10 years, 10 years, 10 years. Group number one, older adults in care homes and home care workers. Two, all those who are over 80. Three, all those who are over 75. Four, all those who are over 75. All those over 65. Six, all those over 18 to 65. Wait a minute. Time out. I'm 64. Don't you be doing that stuff. All of a sudden, you don't go from 65 to 18. I'm willing to wait my turn in line, but this is just an easy reverse order thing. They get complicated. All those 18 to 65 in an at-risk group, all those 60 and over, all those 55 and over, all those 50 and over. Don't be given the free pass to everyone who comes in and says, I'm at risk. I actually think there's going to be plenty of vaccine to go around. But that's why the UK did it in one day. What I'm pointing out to you is all this hand-wringing that's been going on for a week at the CDC. This is not rocket science. Roll it out, open up the centers, get it going. That is followed by news that in Great Britain, they had a vote last night on whether or not the tier system, tier 1, 2, and 3, which they use in the United Kingdom, would be acceptable to the conservative majority. Now, remember, Boris Johnson leads a huge majority. And, of course, he survived it easily because the Labour Party abstained. And he had 55 members say, I don't like what you're doing out of, 340 or something like that, 330. It was not a serious challenge to Boris, not a serious challenge at all. And, therefore, the majority in conservative Great Britain and the majority in the United Kingdom and the Israel will continue to lead the West in its defense against Iran, because in the Biden interview, he said he wants to go back into the Iran deal. Now, this is a nightmare. We tried to tell you it was going to be a nightmare. It's going to happen. He's going to do it, but there's nothing we can do about it except Joe Biden said one good thing to Thomas Friedman, which I wanted you to hear. One really good thing. He said about Mitch McConnell, the President-elect Biden, he knows me, McConnell. I know him, McConnell. I don't ask him to embarrass himself to make a deal, President-elect Biden said to Tom Friedman. And that sounds like a very good start. The Senate Majority Leader will know exactly what Republicans want, which is an increase in top-line defense spending. They will want to make sure that we don't have another hollowing out of the Pentagon as happened under President Obama. That will be number one. They'll want a participation in the judicial selection so we don't have crazy left-wingers going onto the bench anywhere. They'll want to get some of the district court judges who've been blockaded, like Rick Richmond, in California, he's emblematic of many, appointed in the first wave of Biden judges to the district courts that have been blockaded by blue state senators with blue slips. They're going to want a lot of things. And Mitch is going to get a lot of them. And we're very lucky, but that means winning Georgia. And it seems to me that Joe Biden knows the Republicans are going to win Georgia, that David Perdue is going to win, that Kelly Loeffler is going to win, and that Raphael Warnock is a radical's radical, and that John Ossoff is as lightweight as they come, and he makes AOC look like a conservative. So that is great. Now, let me thank each of you who have donated to Angel Tree. I know that there are legion, thousands of you already. I want to invite the rest of you who have been waiting to get in line today by clicking on the banner at the top of HughHewitt.com. That's how you help the child of a prisoner right here in America. Deanna, for example, grew up without her father in the home because he was in prison. She says she was still able to bond with him through gifts from people like you.
Angel Tree is definitely, like, I wouldn't be who I am without Angel Tree, and especially the Christmas program, because, you know, it helps create a bond with me and my dad. Every year, it's just, it gives us something good to talk about, and it makes him happy, which makes me happy. So I think that it's just, it's important to kids.
Please go and be generous. The banner is at the top of HughHewitt.com. It's got a Christmas tree with a child on either side of it. I was talking to Commissioner Hodder about it last night. They work so closely with Angel Tree. They're like joined at the hip because they also serve people who emerge from prison. And so please go to Angel Tree. $22 serves a child. $220 serves 10 children. We've done thousands of kids already. I'd love to do tens of thousands of kids. You know you've got 22 bucks. Please go to HughHewitt.com. Find the banner at the very top of the website. Be generous and come right back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Adam is taking the day off, so Ben is picking the Christmas music, and he has picked, I think he's going to play the worst Christmas music. Ben, we're going to stick with sacred songs today. That'll keep you from doing that to me again. Christmas Tree Rock is the worst Christmas song ever. And Ben went to it as though he was, muscle memory went to terrible music. Good morning, everyone. Wednesday, December the 2nd. Let me check on the markets yesterday. It was Giving Tuesday, and they published the number. This is brought to you, by the way, by Birch Gold. All of you are looking for the perfect Christmas present for your families. Buy them an American Eagle, a Canadian Maple Leaf, a Krugerrand. Buy gold for your grandkids, gold for your children. If you can afford it, you buy it for everybody. If you can't afford it, buy it for the family and put it away. Pass it around, let everyone play tiddlywinks with a Krugerrand, and then you'll have some memorable pictures and some savings that will not decline in value over the long range. What you want to do is also move a portion of your retirement into physical precious metals, and you can do that through Birch Gold. Just go to HughGold.com. Pretty easy to remember. My first name, HughGold.com, HughGold.com. Or you can text my name, Hugh, to 474747. And they will send you the information kit on how to preserve a portion of your retirement against ups and downs and crazy periods, and especially against the inflation that I believe has been coming for a while. And I, with the Democrats in power and the vaccine rolling out, wow, is there going to be a lot of money washing through the system chasing the same amount of goods? That means inflation. The 10-year Treasury, in fact, jumped yesterday to 0.93. It was at 0.84 yesterday morning. It went to 0.93 yesterday. That's the biggest jump I've seen in the 10-year Treasury in a long time. Oil stayed pretty flat at 44, and gold, which was down to 1770. I said, bye, bye, bye. It's up to 1831 this morning. I think it's going to go back over 2,000, but don't believe me. Just do something. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to follow the price every day. Just buy it when you can. The Dow was up 185 points yesterday. NASDAQ was up 156. S&P was up 40. Overseas this morning, England is up a fifth of a percent. Germany is down about the same amount as they absorb news from the United States that on Cyber Monday, $10.8 billion was spent online, a 15% increase. At the end of this quarter, we're going to see a crushing of brick-and-mortar retail like we've never seen before and a blossoming of online retail like we've never seen before. One out of five of those, they say Amazon picks up 20% of every dollar spent online, so they made $2 billion yesterday. Isn't that remarkable, startup company? I own Amazon. I do not own Target or Costco. They got a bunch of it, too. Walmart got a bunch of it. But it's all online, $10.8 billion. When Black Friday disappointed, Cyber Monday was up 15%. Assume Black Friday was down because cyber spending was up. Assume that cyber spending continues. What a quarter they're going to have, because the K-shaped recovery is upon us. I mentioned I had Commissioner Hodder over last night from the Salvation Army, and I asked him because he sees it on the ground. The number of people who have lost their homes, the number of people who have lost their jobs, the number of people who need food assistance, the number of people with addiction, it's up 155% over last year. People see and the Salvation Army serves the lost and the least, so he was out there taking care of them. So I'm very much aware that it's not a complete recovery for everyone, but it is good news on the internet shopping scene. There is also a tweet from the President of the United States. Uh-oh, we caught Dwayne. Did we catch Ben sleeping? The President of the United States has tweeted. I guess he doesn't know where they are. I've only got 50 days left to say that until he comes back in 2024. Section 230, which is a liability shielding gift from the U.S. to big tech, the only companies in America that have it, corporate welfare, is a serious threat to our national security and election integrity. Our country can never be safe and secure if we allow it to stand. And, you know, he went on to say, therefore, if the very dangerous and unfair Section 230 is not completely terminated as part of the National Defense Authorization Act, I'll be forced to unequivocally veto the bill. And when it sends that to the very beautiful, resolute desk. Take back America now. Thank you. I'm not a big fan of big tech, but I don't think we ought to remove all of 230. I think what he ought to get is a timeline and a fast track to a vote next year. Everybody wants to amend 230. We don't want to injure the national security. We don't want to injure the tech sector. We want to end censorship, and we want to end control of any portion of the tech industry by the Chinese Communist Party. Amend it, don't end it, and put into the NDAA a fast track to a vote on a single bill that has to be written within 3 months. That can be done. Stay tuned.
God bless you, gentlemen. God bless you. And the more you give at Christmas time, the more you get.
Christmas is a-coming, and the egg is in the nog.
Welcome back, America. That's Bing. It always means Christmas when I play that, and it always means special counsel when I talk to Andrew C. McCarthy of Fox News and National Review. You can follow him online at Andrew C. McCarthy. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
I'm doing great, Hugh. How are you?
Good. Merry Christmas. It's December. I can say that.
Yes, amen.
Bill Barr gave us a gift yesterday, but it was not much remarked upon. Lost in the coverage of his announcement that there was no fraud, which I think most of us knew there was not fraud sufficient to overturn one state, much less three or four. He announced that John Durham, United States Attorney for Connecticut, had been made a special counsel for purposes of reviewing the Russia hoax. What do you think he did there?
Well, I actually think it's more political than legal protection. He's trying to ratchet up the protection around Durham's investigation to make it more difficult for an incoming Biden administration to remove him. It doesn't really have much legal effect in the sense that even if you just strictly look at the regulations and took them seriously, which the Justice Department never seems to do, Durham isn't qualified to be a special counsel because he's not an attorney from outside the government, which the regs specifically require. Now, the last of the regs, you remember, says that nothing in the regs is enforceable. So basically, the attorney general can do what he wants, and nobody can take him to court over it. But the incoming Biden administration isn't going to feel bound by this designation because it doesn't comply with the regs. But the important thing is he makes it more difficult for them to remove Durham by highlighting the work that he's doing. And also, you know, I think underscore here that this investigation, for all the things that have been said about it, has not been political. They went out of their way not to do anything in the run-up to the election that could have been seen as influencing it. At an early stage, they said that Biden and Obama were not subject to the investigation to take that out of the politics of the election. And Attorney General Barr has been very clear that unless you get strong evidence of meat and potatoes crimes, there aren't going to be charges. We may get a narrative report, but those charges have to meet a high standard. because he doesn't think the Justice Department should be involved in politics, and he needs to get the politics out of the Justice Department.
I doubt we'll see any report unless there is an indictment. I actually believe that that's what Durham is working under. But let's talk about the predicate under the reg. Let's pretend that the regs apply. And you're right. The biggest problem is it's supposed to be a lawyer from outside of the government, and he isn't. The regs say that you've got to have when under the circumstances, it would be in the public interest to appoint an outside special counsel to assume responsibility in the matter. So Durham's not outside, but what would those circumstances have been, and why would he have kept it quiet since he made this designation on October 19th? I have a theory. I want to hear yours first.
Well, I think he kept it quiet because he didn't want it to be perceived as an effort in some way to influence the outcome of the election. Plus, I think by making this designation, he as much as concedes to people that this investigation is not close to being over yet, which means it's not going to be wrapped up before the incoming Biden administration comes in. I think if it was going to be wrapped up before then, there would have been no reason to do this now, Hugh. He could have waited until January to do it.
Well, I'm going to agree and disagree. I think he did it because it does not involve the vice president, and that's why it was not made public. But it does involve serious crime, and so he wanted to put it on the record before the election so that no matter what happened, it was there. And I fell for a head fake in an interview that the attorney general did with me in April. I asked him specifically about prosecuting before an election. He said that only the ban on making that public only applies to a candidate or someone close to him. So I assume that, you know, he would announce anything else, including Russia, Russia, Russia. But I didn't ask him that. That's on me. That was a bad interview. I should have followed up.
Can I respectfully disagree and defend you to you?
Go ahead.
I actually think that was a very important piece of information, because for those of us who watch this closely, probably as important as any single event in this whole train of facts is the January 5th meeting in the Oval Office, where Obama and Biden meet with James Comey, Sally Yates, then the deputy AG, and Susan Rice, who was the national security advisor at the time. And I think they not only discuss the Flynn prosecution, but they talk about what was the main driving force here, which is how do we continue this investigation of Trump once Trump is in power? And they explicitly discuss withholding from the incoming Trump administration information about Russia. And I frankly think that both the removal of Flynn and the removal of Sessions are explained by the fact that the only way you could pull off what they wanted to do, which was continue the investigation after the Trump administration was in power, was to remove people who would have been in the best position to thwart it, which would have been Flynn as National Security Counsel and Sessions as Attorney General. So I think that was actually a very important piece of information, because it showed people that something I think I've been saying all along, which is that there are a lot of things that are in the nature of abuse of power that are not necessarily criminal offenses. And that information from the Attorney General showed that they were not looking at least at that transaction as a crime.
I agree. It was a good question, but the follow-up I should have asked, Andy, and it's Journalism 101, is explore every corner in the room. Is there anything else that might not be made public in the interest of election integrity? Then we would have gotten an answer saying, well, that's possible. You know how Bill Barr talked, that could be.
Right.
I don't answer hypotheticals. That could, anything could happen. You know how he talks. I would have been upbraided and scooted out of the room, but it would have nevertheless been a good question. So it wasn't made public in order not to impact the election. But I want to probe with you, Andrew. I think that he may very well drop indictments on people before January 20th, and he doesn't want them to go away. And looking down the road, he attached these protections prior to the election so people could not say it's sour grapes. That is my interpretation, because I still look at the fact pattern regarding that FISA warrant, many FISA warrants, and say to myself, someone has got to go to jail other than the low-level lawyer who substituted a name. It's just not what we do in this country.
Well, look, I think that all along it's been a fact that if they can prove a black and white false statement to the FISA court, that will be indicted. And I think that's a large part of the reason this investigation is still going on.
If that happens, and we talk about an indictment before or in the aftermath, let me back up a little bit. Do you expect every nominee to the Department of Justice, from AG, Deputy AG, Associate AG, every Assistant Attorney General, to have to undertake before the committee that they will neither interfere with and indeed will cooperate with Durham in this investigation?
I do expect that they'll be aggressively questioned on that. I don't know if they'll be forced into making a commitment, but certainly the Republicans will press for that. I also think, frankly, it will be in Biden's political advantage to let Durham do his work. Let's remember now, this is a guy who was in this kind of status, a special investigator, under not only George W. Bush, but under the Obama administration and the Clinton administration. And he'll be in a position where he'll be reporting directly to Biden's attorney general. So Biden's going to have a lot of protection here. And the best thing he could do for himself would be to just let Durham play this thing out. But Durham's a very scrupulous, hardworking, professional prosecutor, apolitical. I think if he was a political guy, and Biden should know this, we would have seen stuff by now that smacked of politics, and we haven't, even in this environment. So the best thing he could do would be let Durham finish this thing.
Now, I assume, given the nature of the appointment announcement, and given what you mentioned, that it ought to be outside the government, this is not incoming administration people who are the subject of this probe. But if the probe were to expand in its targeting to other people outside of the government, does Barr have to expand that writ to the special counsel before he departs, or can John Durham, as special counsel under a new attorney general, sua sponte, expand it or seek permission to expand it?
He can seek permission to expand it, although I'm sure he has a very wide berth. We'd have to see if there's an underlying memorandum what the scope of the special counsel appointment is. I assume if Barr purported to do this under the regulations, there may be something along those lines. I also am not so sure, Hugh, that this investigation doesn't affect people in the incoming administration. I think it doesn't affect Biden, and it probably doesn't affect Susan Rice, although who knows. But, you know, the big complication in this investigation, the reason I always thought it was going to be a very difficult one to do, is the involvement of foreign intelligence services and our own intelligence service. And I don't know who Biden is planning to bring in, if he's planning to bring in, you know, Brennan and that whole crowd again. But I don't think those guys are outside the ambit of the investigation. I'm not saying I think they're going to be indicted, but I think they're certainly implicated in what went on here.
Well, and I agree that there are a lot of people involved in this that we don't know whether they'll be indicted. My question about confirmation process, I used to know this when I was in the White House counsel's office. Will the FBI know who is the target of Durham so that they can ask people seeking clearances to enter into the government any questions of interest to the special counsel Durham?
I'd be surprised if they were cut into that. I would be surprised if the people who were doing background investigations were cut into what Durham was doing. On the other hand, I think the White House counsel will probably be. So you know that world better than I do, but I think they'll work it out.
You'd hate to see them bring in someone who was in the Durham ambit and then find out afterwards that they were in the scope of the investigation. That would be unfair to the president-elect.
Yeah, but let's not forget, I mean, we're not privy to what Durham has, but, I say this, looking down at my shoes humbly, but a number of us have done a lot of work digging into what happened here. And it'd be very hard, I think, for the people that you and I are talking about in this ambit to get through a confirmation hearing.
Okay. Next question before the break. I hope you can stay with me, Andy. Do you expect Durham to set up a staffing monster like Mueller and the fellow from Chicago, Fitzgerald, did? Because those are the previous special counsels. And by the way, Fitzgerald was the United States attorney. I want to ask you after the break why he could be a special counsel. He wasn't outside of the government. And Durham can't be. That's for next segment, but do you expect John Durham to get a building and 17 lawyers and 40 FBI agents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, like Mueller?
I expect that he would have what he has now. I wouldn't think he's not an empire builder, so I wouldn't expect to see that. Now, you know, there's a whole nother investigation that's like the elephant in the room that we're not talking about, which is the Biden investigation, which, you know, was the information about was suppressed in the run-up to the election.
That's part two. That's part two. After the break, I want to know if going out the door, the special counsel having been confirmed with serious pledges not to have interference, gets a writ to go into the Biden investigation from Bill Barr. I'm going to ask Andy to play hot stove, not football. He's a Jets fan. He doesn't know anything about that. We're going to talk about hot stove special counsels when we come back, America. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway talking with Andrew C. McCarthy. He of Fox News fame. He's the author of many fine books. He writes at National Review. You can read everything Andy writes if you follow him on Twitter, Andrew C. McCarthy. Okay, Andy, two more questions about the special counsel announcement yesterday for John Durham. The first, as you mentioned, Section 600.3 of the regulations governing special counsel specifically state that a special counsel shall be selected from outside the United States government. We've noted that John Durham is inside the United States government. How does that square up? And how does that square up with Patrick Fitzgerald, who was the special counsel who put Scooter Libby through hell and back in the vain pursuit of a non-crime of the Bush era?
And also known as my co-counsel in the Blind Shea case.
I'd forgotten that. Okay.
Long ago and far away. Well, I think that Pat was in the same posture that Durham has been in since 2019, which is that the Attorney General, as we know under the regs, the last reg, which is 600.10, basically says that nothing in the regs is actionable. Nobody can object if the Attorney General doesn't comply with the letter of them. So it gives the Attorney General a lot of discretion to structure things as he wants to structure them. And I think in those investigations, and Judge Mukasey did this as well with Durham in connection with the CIA interrogations. The idea is to bring a good prosecutor from outside Washington into an investigation that's, Washington through and through. And these have been U.S. attorneys from outside the Washington area. Barr did it also with the guy in St. Louis, Jeff Jensen, who took a look at the Flynn investigation. I think this is a good practice, and it indicates that we do need something between the normal course of investigation by the Justice Department and the FBI versus like the independent aspiration of the special counsel when you have someone from outside Washington. Like you, I can't stand special counsels. I would prefer most of the time a solution in the middle where you brought a good prosecutor in who has a good reputation on both sides of the aisle from outside Washington to look at these cases. I think you'd be a lot better served than these empires that the special counsels build.
Well, we also get another confirmation, never to believe the media. There was a departure from the Durham team of a longtime colleague, and everyone speculated it was because he was going to bring an indictment with which she disagreed. It probably turned out that she wanted to retire. But, you know, who knows? We never know.
Right.
Last question. Hunter Biden and the allegations that would bring into play the Foreign Agents Registration Act and a bunch of other issues and money laundering and all that, they are not in the news accounts. Does that mean they are not now presently part of the writ of Durham, or that they could not become part of the writ of Durham before Barr leaves?
Oh, I don't think that they're part of the writ of Durham at all. And that would take the Durham investigation in a different direction. I think Durham's doing what he's doing, and Barr undoubtedly has somebody else dealing with that investigation. And that, I think, you in a way that maybe the Durham investigation, because of the way that it unfolded, is different. I think the Biden investigation, if it's serious, now we don't know what the details of the investigation are, but if it's a serious investigation and they are fearful that there was serious wrongdoing, that's the kind of thing where even I reluctantly would say you might have to have a special counsel for that.
And if that were the case from a preliminary review, would you expect Bill Barr to appoint said counsel before leaving and for the confirmation hearings to address that as well?
Yes, because otherwise, you know, the problem you have is that it could go away and it would be a real political hot potato. Barr would actually be doing a favor for whoever the next attorney general is.
Well, you know remember Ken Starr didn't want Monica Lewinsky. He tried to lateral that, and Janet Reno gave it back to him. Is that the precedent that Barr would follow if there's stuff out there? Look, I've got one standing over here. Let him just do it. Or do you think he really ought to go find somebody new?
To go more broadly with what happened with Ken Starr, I think the whole debacle with Janet Reno and Chuck LaBella and, you know, everything that went on before Starr finally got appointed, which was under the statute, not under the reg, counsels in favor of having the current attorney general make whatever designation needs to be made, because it'll be a big problem for Barr's attorney, for Biden's attorney general. I think, you know, it'd be much easier and cleaner if Barr just names a good, scrupulous special counsel, if there's a need for it, than to drop it in the lap of the next AG.
On that note, Andy, thank you for joining me. We look forward to reading your columns on this. They're always the go-to sort of definitive word for serious people who are not conspiracy nuts, but who do want to see justice done. Andrew C. McCarthy on Twitter. Thank you, Andrew.